This is September 14th, 1989. I'm at Nat Reese's home on Bell Street in Princeton, talking to Nat about how he got started in music. And you were talking about Blind
Charlie.
Blind Charlie.
Yeah, from Hitman, West Virginia. When he left the South and came out, he had some sight, but it was dim. One eye was very dim and the other one was going. And he signed up on the WPA work, and you know, they would build what they call outhouses, you know, which was outdoor toilets, you know. And every house on every job just about had to have one, you know, and they was all built in a row. And the WPA work, the government would pay the men a subsidy. It was almost like welfare now, but it was a working type of a welfare system.
Yeah.
And as he worked on this along, that other eye began to go, and then when he knew anything, he was just, the doctors declared him permanently blind. And, well, he remembered playing before, and then he started catching and listening to different people play as they would come through. You see, in the coal field, it wasn't anywhere for people to go anyhow, and they'd work all the week, and the railroad men was there with the railroad company, the Virginia Railroad, and then the Norfolk and Western was on, the CNO was over across the mountain, like down on the other side of Fayette County and over in there. And the miners was there. Mines was just about, you could stand in one place and throw a rock and hit another mine camp, you know. And so they would, on Friday nights, it was always a house that somebody would go in and move into and knock a wall down or something, and have a little dancing room and a kitchen and a bedroom. And they would, on the weekends, that's where the men would go out for the recreation, you know. They'd buy fish sandwiches and chitlins and, you know, and chicken dinners. And they had the homebrew and moonshine, and wasn't too much bottle and bond whiskey out then, you know, unless someone bought it from another state and brought it in. And that was just the only enjoyment they had. Now, quite a few people spread it around over the communities. They'd have these old-timey upright pianos. And most of the time, neither people that owned them couldn't play them. I don't know why they bought them. Maybe it was for the children, you know, maybe to learn. Because people would travel backwards and forth, coming from maybe down in North Carolina, Mississippi, or Georgia. They would come through, guys that didn't do anything but just play music. And they'd come in and make sure they get there on a Fridays. Because Friday night, they'd have them dances, and Saturday night, they'd have the dance, and the people would pay them so much money and give them a place to stay and food and all the whiskey they could drink, or homebrew, whichever one. Some of them didn't even drink at all, but most of them did. And Charlie would learn different chords and music, different tunes, and he started to mix in country music with the blues, with the Delta blues style that he bought here from somewhere down in Mississippi. I don't know whether it was around Tupelo or Waycross. No, what was that? It was another place in Mississippi I used to hear him talk about. When Waycross was in Georgia, he used to talk about, but it was another place in Mississippi, but he did name Tupelo. So it was somewhere close to there where I think he was going at. And he bought that style out and mixed that style with the country music and that the people played around down through Wyoming County. And I learned it from him after he had mixed it. he, Charlie Wade, Floyd Wilson, I believe his last name was, another blues player, Lloyd Doughton. He was another blues player. And all those guys, they'd sit down and just get together when they could meet and play, but just about every week it was two or three of them together at one of these houses. Mm-hmm. And the people would drink, buy something to eat, they had to do something to spend that money.
Every Friday?
Payday was just about every Friday. And some of the mines was every 2 weeks, but you could go to the store and get scrip. And it was people would buy scrip from you and give you 90 cents on a dollar. You can see the profiteers there, you know. Well, in between paydays, if a man wanted to go out and go to one of the dances or something, he'd just go in and get him $10 or $15 worth of scrip, you know, and take that $3 or $4, $5 loss and get that cash money and go on. And that's where I started learning. I'd go and peep in through the windows and watch them make the cards and things. All of them just about knew my dad. Dad had friends all over, so I told them, they'd see me peeping. They say, "I seen you peeping in there the other night through that window." See, because I wasn't allowed to go in because I was too young, you know. Mm-hmm. See, nowadays a boy 8 or 9 years old can go in any joint at year round. You don't too many people stop them. But, buddy, you better not get called back then, buddy. You got caught in a place like the people would whoop you, and when they took you home, your parents would whoop you on top of you, buddy. But I asked him, I said, "I sure would like to learn to play that well. We're going to see if we can't find you an old guitar." So Lloyd Doughton found me an old guitar. And then I never thought about guitar having 6 strings. And a ukulele having 4 strings. And I sold papers and bought me a ukulele, ordered through Montgomery Ward. It cost $1.98, I think it was $1.97. Real good ukulele. Sound better than some of these things they're making now. And they told me, said, "Well, if you're gonna play the uke, you'll have to play it. From Lloyd Doughton, but the rest of the blues people say, well, you're going to have to learn blues on a guitar, on a regular guitar." Well, once or twice, it didn't have but 4 or 5 strings on it, but that's the way I learned. And then I got to the place I buy my strings and put on. I do little odd jobs and make a little extra money. Buy my strings, and I kept me some strings, and I started singing in gospel, and playing the guitar along with it in church. Mm-hmm. And it just kept growing. And I did this gospel thing. I was singing gospel, but I was playing blues. That was actually the way what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And then after, when I got up some size, they wouldn't say too much if I'd go in and sit in and play in these houses, and I began to play in them too, and I found out them guys were making $8, $9, $10 a night. He did a lot of money. Back then it was.
Yeah.
It was pretty good back then. But this Blind Charlie and Charlie Wade, they both told me, which I never thought of it that way. I said, they just run off at the mouth, you know. And they say one of these days, people are gonna forget this music. I said, no. To me, I thought the whole world was another coal field. See, because I was raised down there, you know. I was born in Virginia, but I was raised down there. And then, I guess, after I got about 18, 19 years old, I started playing dance music with jazz bands, Mitchell Gordon and Sinclair Martin and a few more of the guys, teachers. And, well, the biggest of them were school teachers that played music around through this part, dance music in Princeton, yeah, around Mercer County. That blues playing was down in Wyoming County and in McDowell County, where Howard Armstrong used to hang around. And then when I first met Howard, I was about 16, 17 years old. And he was playing out of Bluefield, playing down in Keystone and Norfolk and Welch and Gary, all of them down Bramwell, all of them down them hollows. And that was big doings down in there, buddy. And he used to play blues guitar. Mm-hmm. What was surprising to me when I didn't see him for years. And then 7 years ago, I met him at John Henry Festival, and he was playing the violin, the fiddle. And so I told Ed Galvin, he said he thought he knew you. I said, nah, the guy I knew used to play the guitar. You play the guitar. I said, that ain't no how. And then the closer I got, I thought, well, my God, it is him. And then we began to talk. And then they left, well, after the John Henry Festival, though, which wasn't yet a couple of days. I didn't see him anymore till I got to Vandalia. And then we were together for a week, or so, you know, at a time.
I'm in Augusta.
What did I say, Vandalia? I'm sorry. I would get them. I play at them two places, and they get Vandalia. I play it three or four, five times a year. Used to before I got hurt. But anyhow, Augusta is where we met them the first week, and then the second week we was up there together about 2 years straight. And boy, we got to go back over we reminisce over some of the old days and things. We played some one or two pieces together here and then. We'd get in the rooms at night when the rest of them were down to the ice house. We'd get up there, boy, and get in the room and play some of the old pieces, you know. And which was that was a joyful time. I'd like to see old Howard again. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see him one more time and have for one of us passes off the scene. But he's trying to leave his music. He's trying to leave something for people. And you get a lot out of it. It's worth, money can't buy the gratification that you get out of leaving a mark. Mm-hmm. I mean, you satisfy so well. I know one thing, so-and-so learned. He learned to play it. This lady learned to play it, or that girl learned to play it. And you know, out of all those people, somebody's gonna keep playing. Mm-hmm. And that's like, the music transcends across lines. See, that's the main thing. Everybody seems to come in. You find 9 out of 10 people likes the style. They say they never heard it before. They heard the parents talking about it or mm-hmm. something. And they buy the album or they hear somebody else's album. I sold 4 albums here the other day. And one had heard one man's album. And said, well, I want me one. And one guy said, well, I'm going to get a copy off of yours and put it on tape. He said, you go buy you one. It just make you feel pretty good. I was sitting about dying laughing. Boy, they was having a good time. And just through selling those albums is the one where I got those 4 students there.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And they said that they debated 4 or 5 days whether to answer me or not. Because I said, well, now, wait a minute. I know I'm no beauty, but I don't look that bad. I mean, I ain't scaring people. Oh, you know. And they go to laugh, and they said, no, I said, but you know, so we didn't know whether to ask you whether you, say, a lot of musicians, say, they asked somebody one time that came over to Concord College to play, asked them about having them some with some, with playing on music, and said the guy insulted them. Mm-hmm. And you know, people shouldn't do things like that. But we do have some, got some guys on the road that's really making money that's nasty, got some of the nastiest dispositions you ever seen. Yeah. And I think, I think that's the worst thing it is in the world.
These folks are, you say they're in their 20s?
Young 20s people. And 30.
Are they white or black? Or
white, all of those white. Mm-hmm. All of them are white. I've had two black students up here, Jamal. Well, I didn't have the other one up here, but it was at Vandalia for 2 years. And that's the I like to call the boy name then. He's out of Washington, D.C. Margo knows him. Well, he's a young fella. And he's playing like mad. He's playing some of my stuff and playing some of Cephas' stuff. And he's picking up some of John Jackson's stuff. Mm-hmm. And he got all kind of stuff mixed up. But he's playing. Uh-huh. He's and plays good guitar, too.
Yeah.
Plays good guitar. You see me, I don't care who I teach, as long as a man wants to learn.
Yeah.
Now, I tell you, a man that really fell into it and does it, and when he left, he was doing it good, and he added a little country with it, and he had something going, and that was Stanaker, Leonard,
yeah.
Leonard took the style that I had, and he just added a little other licks to it, and boy, he's something hot.
Yeah.
He is hot with that stuff, uh-huh. Man. And I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm so glad. I just want him to come off the ball a little bit and keep on teaching. Because he told me he showed some guys in Nashville, he showed some in Richmond, Virginia, and I believe he told me in somewhere in North Carolina, and said all of them wanted to know, man, where did you learn that style of playing that?
Leonard, he's a regular old rounder now. You never came down.
Oh, my God, the man's been everywhere.
He'll be here one day, and the next day he's gone.
That's true. But he's a regular old guy.
Yeah.
Just like an old shoe.
Yeah.
Don't tell him I call him an old shoe now.
I know what you mean.
No, he wouldn't do nothing but that.
Yeah.
And then he came in and stayed over 2 months, almost 3 months with me.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
He's writing some good songs.
Is he writing some now?
Yeah.
That's good. That is good. I believe in time he'll get back off of that little hindrance he's got. He'll get off of it. It just takes time. Time changes everybody some, you know.
Yeah.
And I believe he'll get off of it. But when did they start this off?
It started.
I want to cut you.
It started. Okay, we'll go over the application form. The first question is, tell us about your background and experience in this traditional art.
My background in that music started when I was around eight years old in the coal fields in Wyoming County, learning from old blues players, old blues masters that moved from the deep south to the coal fields looking for jobs, and some was just came through, then stay a while and play to make money. And I forgot the other part of your question.
Have you been playing? You stayed right with it?
I stayed with music. Well, I started off learning. I learned to play the blues, and then I added the gospel music to the blues music, played blues chords and put gospel to it. And I did that from the age of eight, it was starting 8 or 9 years old, with an old uke and an old ukulele and an old guitar. And then my dad gave me a few. He was a guitar picker, and he didn't have one at the time, and he'd go and borrow one and bring it in and play some and show me different chords, C chord, D chords, and how to, he showed me how to pick, really pick. But somewhere along the line, I started losing the picking theory and started strumming with a pick, because I started playing in around the 12th and 13th year. I started playing with the Dukes of Swing here in Princeton, and they had a little 7-piece, 8-piece band. And I played dance music with them. Then I went from them, when I got about 18, started playing with the Bluefield State Collisions over at Bluefield State College. They had a 23-piece band over there, and they didn't have a guitar player. So I started playing with them, and I would be playing one night with the Dukes of Swing, yeah, and then the next night with the Bluefield State Collisions over at Bluefield, or down in Christiansburg, Virginia, Run Oak, Columbus, Ohio, Charleston, and that was back in the 30s. And then when the war came on, World War II, well, went in service, played some in there, and came back out of service, and it was a few of the guys left, older guys, and we would play music around for dances, for barns, where they sold barns and things. And then I played on the stages of the old theaters that you used to have here, like the Rialto Theater and the Royal Theater here in Princeton, and at the Colonial Theater on stage in Bluefield. And we'd play on just before the midnight showing of the last film over there, you know, a reel. And what they would do while it was changing over, they would have, they wasn't completely X-rated films, but it was a little bit more showing anatomy of people than it was on the day screening, which wasn't much. But you could at least, they had some people in bathing suits, and they wouldn't show that in the daytime because the kids were there, and you had to come to that 11:30 or 12 o'clock show at night, the late night show, to see the bathing suits. The people walk around with the little bathing suits on and stuff like that, you know. And we would play a half an hour while from 11 to 11:30 or from 11:30 to 12. The band would play one piece right behind the other in a big theater full of people upstairs in the balcony and downstairs. Mm-hmm. As in Bluefield over here, we play at the Supper Club in Bluefield for Hugh Shot, one of the richest men around, been around in this part of the country. You know, he owned Bluefield Daily Telegraph and two or three of the radio stations, and I think the first TV station. And his sons, Hugh and John, still, some of them still carrying on the Shot's name now around. Now, I knew the old man personally, just like I'm talking to you. And we've sat down and we discussed the different hemispheres, the different parts of the country, how people was, and what people's feeling was between music, and some between the colors, and food, what you eat, and what was good for you and what wasn't. He would tell me his ideas and I'd tell him my ideas. And I told him, I said, well, one thing about it, if you're not eating chitlins, Mr. Shot, you're going hungry. You know, and he'd laugh about that. He said, well, that's hog intestines. I said, you're still going hungry. I said, I said, you eat ham, don't you? He said, yes. I said, that's the rear end of the hog. What's the difference? Really, we did. We talked just like that, and I was just a young man. And at that time, I guess Mr. Shot was he was in his 40s. Mm-hmm. Around pretty close to 50, because he done made a whole lot of money at that time. Mm-hmm. And the first, this big first national breakfast that they've been carrying on every year that they have in Bluefield, our band, Seven Piece, played for the first one that his dad, that they shot's dad, started over at the country club in Bluefield. Hmm. I was there for the first breakfast. Mm-hmm. And they didn't send us in the kitchen to eat either. They put us a table. It was, well, it was an extra table out there on the floor, so they just put enough chairs around it for us, and we sat down and had our breakfast too, and then got back up and went out on the plane. No, I'm not lying.
Mm-hmm. How about, let's see, the second part of this is...
Because I didn't make that too short. I just got to run around.
Yeah, that's all right.
I you can condense it down. So
tell us about the proposed apprenticeship. You can probably cover that pretty easy.
Well, you mean what I want to do with it? I'm still doing the same thing I did when I learned Leonard Stanaker, when I was teaching Leonard Stanaker on his grant. I want to leave the music here with someone else to give it to someone else so it can be passed on, because 10 years ago, we found out I was the only one playing the music, style of music, in the whole state of West Virginia. And supposing I'd have died or got killed, it would have been lost. And I'm trying to keep it from being lost now. And I, not only, well, by the, they can, maybe you'll have the records, you know, to go by, but it's you need to see thing, some, right? Need people need to know how to execute it, pick up an instrument and play it. And since they love it so well, and they can pass it on to the children. And so if the children wants to learn, let them pass it on to their children, and then it won't die. They'll say, well, someone will say one of these days, you remember that old-timey music they used to play? That's what they call it, you know, old-timey, you know. They make you feel anxious at that. You remember, can you play that old-timey piece? I don't know, I wasn't back then old-timey days, you know. But that's the way they talk to you. But they'll say, well, yeah, I can play some of that. My mother taught me so and so and so. Well, maybe she got it from her mother, and maybe her mother said it on one of my classes. I don't know. And how come Washington, D.C., and New York and those places, we listen to their style of music? How come they should know something about ours? And see, all of the people that's from down here, don't, some of them come go leave from here and go up there, but some of them don't know it. And if they learn, they can take it up there and show it. Sit down and start playing that style of music. They'll wonder, wait a minute, where'd you get that from? And that's what they usually say. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want to do. I want to pass it on. I don't want it to die, because it almost we lost it once. We almost lost it. And last year when I had this car wreck and broke both legs and my brain was out, my skull was bursted and all cut down through here, jaw broke, I got 4 bones in my right jawbone. Yeah. My cheek was built up with a bone off of my hip, and they had put plastic and steel in here on the right side. All this is artificial in here, plastic and steel and stuff, and both of my legs is broke. And that was last year. I could not have been here this year, and I'd like to do this year and get Bob singing it and feeling it as he is now. He's feeling, you can tell the difference in the time when you heard him when he's playing. He can play now a note on the harp that has feelings in it. Mm-hmm. He's giving tone its value. He knows when to increase the volume and when to play it soft. And that's what blues is telling a story, but telling it effectively. Mm-hmm. So that you can feel it. If I can't feel it, you can't feel it. putting yourself in it. Mm-hmm. And he's doing that. He's doing that. Mm-hmm. But he, you know, he have to drive quite a bit to get over here where I am. And it's, I mean, he's teaching school, but he's not rich, you know. But we've been scuffling it out between the two of us. I make sure you don't have to walk home. get a little low sometimes. And a lot of the places you go and play, you can whittle this down and make out of it the way you want it, where you want to put it.
We do
a lot of playing for schools. We play for the parks down here at Pipestem. For the kids, they have a bunch of high school children coming in, sometimes from Pennsylvania and from Chicago, from many parts of Illinois, from the other side of Chicago. They come in, and they will spend a week. And what they do is paint senior citizens' houses and fix their porches that's falling down. And see, it's no money involved in this. The kids are just doing this free gratis.
Yeah.
And Bob and I go and play for them and just entertain them, mm-hmm. you know. And this is we buy our own gas and use our own time to give these kids this enjoyment.